President Obama delivered his State of the Union address last night, calling on Congress to work together to help America out-educate, out-innovate, and out-build the rest of the world, while at the same time cutting the deficit. We will hear from a wide range of guests all morning long, offering perspectives and analysis of what the president had to say, as well as the Republican response from Wisconsin's Paul Ryan, who touted the need for smaller government. We will hear from members of our Wisconsin congressional delegation, from political scientists, from political commentators, from economists, from party leaders, and from you, I trust, at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 9 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, January the 26th. We will start our coverage, our reaction and analysis with Reed Ribble, Republican U.S. Representative from Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District, which covers most of northeastern Wisconsin, including the cities of Green Bay and Appleton. And Representative Ribble joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Thanks very much for joining us. What did you like about the speech?
I think there were several things I like about the speech. The president's always been a very good orator. And some of the things that I thought I could agree with were he stressed the idea of regulatory reform. If we're going to get jobs going again in this country, we have to recognize that an overbearing regulatory environment is hurting jobs. So he spoke about that. He called for a five-year spending freeze. For those of us that are a little more fiscally conservative, I think that was good news to hear that he was willing to get serious about it. He also called, and this was a little surprise for me, he called for tort reform for medical malpractice claims, which he wasn't going to bend on during the health care debate last year. So there were some things there that encouraged me, and he also called for some reforms to our tax code. So
you like
those,
that stuff,
those were
yeah.
All positive signs.
So what concerned you? What didn't you like so much?
Well, the concern is that my biggest concern is that I've heard the speech before. The last two State of the Union speeches have been very similar. He called for similar things, and I find myself in many occasions agreeing with what the president says. But then there seems to be a disconnect in what the president often does. And so I think it'll be interesting to see which direction this actually ends up going. Clearly, with a Republican majority in the House of Representatives, he's going to have to move a bit to the center. And so we'll see if he's willing to actually move to the center a little bit. I stand here ready and willing to work with him on these issues and on these reforms if he's serious about it. But I do have some concerns as well. He talks about freezing spending, but then came up with a whole list of things to spend money on. Mm-hmm. He talked about regulatory reform, but came up with a whole list of things he wouldn't be willing to reform. And so I have to see how this all translates into policy. You know, it was a good speech, though.
So if he says, though, let's invest, he said invest in education, in innovation for jobs, for rebuilding our infrastructure, in theory, that vision, is that a good thing to invest in, all of those things?
Well, sure. I mean, a couple places. You know, he talked about investing in infrastructure, and I've never disagreed with the idea of investing in infrastructure. Quite frankly, when they passed the stimulus bill in 2008, he talked about shovel-ready projects. But the problem is the money didn't get to shovel-ready projects, and here we are 2 years later, having not made much progress on it. On education, the United States spends more per student than most countries in the world. I think maybe a better approach would be to really challenge our education system to do a better job with what they've been given, because they've been given a lot more than any place else on the planet. And so he did talk a little bit about holding school districts, administrations, teachers accountable for performance, and I'd like to see how that translates to policy as well.
So did you have a date last night?
I did.
A bipartisan date?
I sat right next to Tammy Baldwin. We had a great time. I very much enjoyed our conversation before the event. And we enjoyed the State of the Union address together.
And do you think Congress will be able to work together on at least some of the initiatives mentioned last night?
Yeah, I do. And I have found many members on both the Republican and the Democratic side of the aisle to be very collegial. I think there is a ever-growing awareness that we are facing a fiscal crisis. There's some very much fiscal uncertainty in the country today. Everybody's aware of it. Now it's a matter of crafting policy that we can get some agreement on both sides. And quite frankly, the Wisconsin delegation has a history of being able to work together on issues that affect Wisconsin. I'm very proud of how well in the past they've worked together, and I look forward to working with members of the Democratic Party within our own delegation.
Yeah, we've kept you longer than we promised, but a brief reaction to President Obama going to Manitowoc today to apparently talk jobs and I don't know what else.
He's going to be visiting Orion, which is a green energy company in Manitowoc. When I own my roofing company, we work closely with Orion and use a lot of their products. I'm pleased that the president's coming to Wisconsin and showing us some love today. And I'll be having one of my staff members at the event. And he's visiting a great Wisconsin company.
Thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Joy.
Reed Ribble is a Republican U.S. representative from Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District, which covers most of northeastern Wisconsin. Now joining us is Charles Franklin. Charles Franklin is a professor of political science at UW-Madison. He is co-developer of Pollster.com. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks a lot for coming in early. So what was your general reaction to the president's speech last night?
You know, a lot of State of the Union's become a laundry list of proposals, and this was a fairly short laundry list. And hitting the three big topics of the night, out-innovate, out-educate, out-build the rest of the world, and winning the future, I think the president pushed some broad themes with a few specifics rather than some of the famous lists of program after program after program that we've seen before. But I think for conservatives and Republicans who were looking for more details about how he would address the deficit and the debt, aside from the relatively speaking modest freeze, $800 billion over 10 years used to be a good bit of money, but given the size of the deficit right now, that amounts to $80 billion a year, is not much of the federal budget. You know, I don't think there were very many specifics there that would certainly satisfy the deficit hawks who are looking for much bigger savings.
Mm-hmm.
He was a little bit willing to defend health care reform, but bent a bit on improving mistakes in it. He specifically singled out the burden of paperwork on small businesses, which is something that's been pointed to as a major burden that wasn't really intended but amounted to that. So he's willing to do that. The one thing that he used throughout the speech in inviting Republican and opposition points of view was he kept using the formulation he's used before. I'm willing to listen to, as opposed to, I will support your position. So he said, I'm willing to listen to changes in tort law about how to sue in medical malpractice cases. He said, if you have things that will change, add to the savings in health care reform, I'm willing to listen to that. Well, that's the formulation we've heard for 2 years and really didn't break any new ground at all.
Yeah. He did say as well, though, we cannot make the tax cuts for the wealthy permanent if we really care about the deficit.
It's one of the few things he said about taxes specifically, but this repeats a position he held before after reluctantly going along with extending the tax cuts temporarily for everyone. He clearly is ready to continue the fight about whether the wealthiest Americans should retain those Bush-era tax cuts.
I asked Congressman Ribble if he thought that Congress was going to be able to work together on these ideas. He thought maybe in some cases. What do you think?
Well, I think Congress works together just about as well as it always does. And the president acknowledged that. He said, these debates will be tough. We're going to argue about every word of them. And that, the president said, is what makes America exceptional. What makes us different is that we have those kinds of detailed fights. So in a simplistic view that there's some bipartisan compromise that suddenly emerges and everyone agrees to, no, that's not going to happen. But specifically, you talked about changing corporate taxes in ways that might simplify that tax code. And that did get big bipartisan applause when he suggested it. There were a few other points in the speech, a little bit on education, that seemed to get, find a spot where both parties might agree on them. And one of his points that I think has been a little underplayed, he talked about the structure of government having not been reformed since the 1950s. Mm-hmm. One of the amusing parts here was when he talked about how salmon are regulated by one agency in saltwater and a different agency in freshwater, and the best line, he didn't know who regulates smoked salmon.
Right, right. Yeah.
But if he were really serious about that, that could open a major area of change in modifying regulations and the regulatory apparatus. It's very hard to tell from one paragraph of this speech how serious he is about that as an opening, but it could be a major thing.
We are talking with Charles Franklin, professor of political science at UW-Madison, about the president's State of the Union address last night, and we'll talk some, too, about the Republican response from Wisconsin's Paul Ryan. And we want your response as well. What stood out to you from the State of the Union address? Do you support the president's vision? Do you want Congress to work together on passing these policies to make this vision? Or do you have some concerns? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. It's going to be cloudy today, some scattered light snow, mainly in southern and western Wisconsin this morning. Highs today will be in the 20s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
Support for WPR comes from Von Briesen and Roper, a Wisconsin-based law firm with more than 100 attorneys dedicated to providing unparalleled service in meeting the needs of local, national, and international clients. Information at vonbriesen.com.
This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Following last night's State of the Union address, we are hearing from many different guests from many different perspectives reacting to the State of the Union address. Coming up after 7 this morning, we'll welcome in two political commentators from different political perspectives. John Nichols and Brian Schimming will be our guests coming up after 7 o'clock. And we have a whole host of different guests joining us for a brief amount of time each in our 8 o'clock hour, including U.S. Senator Herb Kohl will be joining us for a time during our 8 o'clock hour, as will Democratic U.S. Representative from Wisconsin's 4th Congressional District, Gwen Moore. Margaret Farrow, a Republican former Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, will be with us after 8, as will Mike Tate, the chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party. And we will also have other guests and you, and we want to hear from you all morning long as well. What did you think? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our expert analyst this hour is Charles Franklin, professor of political science at UW-Madison, co-developer of pollster.com. We do have some calls I'd like to get to and many things we need to talk about, Professor Franklin, but I was curious. I know you you watch the polls with pollster.com. The president went into the State of the Union last night on a little bit of a bump. His approval ratings are up. Do we know how the public reacted to what he had to say last night yet?
Yeah. Actually, before I get that, let me correct a mistake I just made. I said that the freeze on the budget would amount to $800 billion in savings. Actually, the president said $400 billion. So let me not double the amount of savings that's here.
You were thinking of a biennium or something.
But no doubt. I've got some excuse for that, but it's my mistake. It's $400 billion is what he said in the speech. In terms of the polling, the president's approval rating has risen from the mid-40s to the very low 50s across most of the polling, an increase of about 5 or 6% in approval and a bit of a similar decline in disapproval. And so for the first time in 12 months plus, his approval rating is a little bit higher than his disapproval rating. He's above water. That all happened during the lame duck session of Congress, which voters, despite the fact that it raised the deficit, involved a good bit of spending, all happened when Congress was cooperating with the president and they passed a variety of things. Had nothing to do with the State of the Union. Across all of the post-war State of the Union speeches, in 19 cases, the president's approval has gone up a little bit. In 20 cases, it's gone down a little bit. And the truth is, most of those changes are well within the margin of the error of the survey. So, in fact, there's very little evidence that the State of the Union in general has really boosted president standing with the public. I'd be surprised, especially with last night's speech, if it mattered very much, because last night's speech was not some dramatic new clarion call to a bigger vision of America. It was a much more prosaic, much more narrow speech, I think.
A little more solemn in decorum with what happened to Congresswoman Gabby Giffords?
It certainly opened that way with explicit recognition of Giffords, though I did not think he dwelt on that very much and mentioned civility and things like that almost in passing in the first page or two of the speech and then didn't come back to it. So I think it was somewhat more muted that way. One other thing that was notable about the speech is after Bill Clinton suffered his great defeat in the 1994 elections, he opened his State of the Union speech the next year by saying the era of big government is over. A direct concession that the Republican takeover of Congress meant a major change in the direction of government. We didn't hear anything similar, I think, from President Obama last night, acknowledging that there's a Republican House and the need to work together and we're going to argue about these things. But there was no similar concession that in speaking, the public really did lead him to conclude that the direction of his government needed to fundamentally change.
Let's get some listeners in on this. Bill in Sun Prairie joins us. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I would like your guest's opinion on the reason why. Yeah, it never seems to be mentioned that in trying to balance the budget, no one ever seems to talk about efficiency of programs. You know, we are not getting the bang for our buck. Every year they reappropriate money, and no one ever asks, what did we get for the money we've spent, both in military and non-military spending? There's so much waste, fraud, abuse. We hear about this all the time. And I just listened to the panel the other day talking about corruption in Afghanistan rebuilding. And there's something like 90 inquiries into fraud, bribery, substandard materials. And it, you know, when you add this up, it comes to billions and billions of dollars, and no one ever talks about it. And that could balance the budget and get our economy rolling again.
Yeah. What do you think, Professor Franklin?
Yeah, I think this is a good point. You know, we have some structures built in, the accounting office and auditors and things like that. But this issue of how efficient programs are, and it all gets wrapped up in the idea of waste, fraud, and abuse. So Bill's point that we could balance the budget just from that efficiency is essentially a claim that there's well over 20%, maybe 25% of the federal government, which is purely waste, fraud, and abuse. That sounds inviting, and for anyone that's had to fill out government forms and deal with bureaucracy, it's pretty easy to believe that that might be true. But the fact is that both Democratic and Republican administrations have found it awfully hard, ultimately, to wring out major savings purely on efficiency grounds. So I think one of the elements here is that we tend to think it's easier than it really is. But the other is the issue of reexamining programs and deciding whether they should continue or not. Even during the Reagan administration, that was certainly started out with the goal of shrinking government in dramatic ways, very few, I believe the count was as little as 3, federal programs were actually ended during the first 4 years of the Reagan administration. And it shows just how sticky these programs are and how difficult it is to cut them back. This is one of the things that some of the largest cuts that are being proposed on the GOP side are going to have to address, and be very interesting to see if they can achieve that magnitude. But it's largely not by reducing the efficiency or improving the efficiency so much as it is really saying, let's shut down programs completely and zero out their budgets.
Thank you, Bill. Linda in Monroe, what did you think?
Hello, Joy. Hello, Professor Franklin. Well, I think President Obama's message left you with hope, but I think Representative Ryan left you with a little, except that the fact that we have to do something about the growing deficit and fast. Now, President Obama mentioned the five-year time frame and the fact that the rich would have to participate to reduce the deficit. Now, that would leave the Democrats leeway to maybe raise the tax on the wealthy to maybe 50 or 60% by next year. Now, Representative Ryan, if one was to do it any faster, would have to raise the individual federal income tax to 90%, where President Franklin Roosevelt had it. Now, President Bush, when he got into two wars and lowered the income tax, is what got us into the debt.
Yeah, thank you, Linda. So we have news coming up in less than a minute, Professor Franklin. Are we going to see a tax increase on the wealthy?
Well, I think certainly we'll see the president push for that over the next couple of years once this temporary extension expires. And we'll have a good partisan fight over that. But really, I think the issue of the deficit and how you cut programs, that's where the real gap between the GOP and the House and the president and the Democrats is. I think that's where we'll see the very interesting developments over the next 3 to 6 months.
We are discussing last night's State of the Union address and welcoming your response at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Talking in this hour with Professor of Political Science at UW-Madison, Charles Franklin. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
We didn't just surpass the Soviets. We unleashed a wave of innovation that created new industries and millions of new jobs. This is our generation's Sputnik moment.
This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, and that, of course, was President Obama from last night's State of the Union address, calling on Congress to work together to help America out-educate, out-innovate, and out-build the rest of the world. This is our Sputnik moment. 1-800-642-1234. What did you think of the speech last night? What did you think about the vision unveiled? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 6:37 on this Wednesday, January the 26th. We are hearing from a wide variety of guests all morning long reacting to the State of the Union and the Republican response from Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan.
We need to reclaim our American system of limited government, low taxes, reasonable regulations, and sound money, which has blessed us with unprecedented prosperity. And it has done more to help the poor than any other economic system ever designed. That's the real secret to job creation, not borrowing and spending more money in Washington.
So do you agree with Congressman Ryan or with President Obama, or are they both right in some ways? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest for the rest of this hour is Charles Franklin, professor of political science at UW-Madison, co-developer of pollster.com. And Professor Franklin, what did you think of Congressman Ryan's Republican response last night?
You know, it like the president's speech, set out some broad themes. We just heard the cuts from it of the deficit, the burden of debt is the crisis that confronts the country. It's imperative that we deal with it. But the details, not so much. Just as with the president's speech, the details were not so much. I noticed one sentence in Congressman Ryan's speech. He said, "Our forthcoming budget is our obligation to you to show you how we intend to do things differently, how we will cut spending and get the debt down." That's the promissory note here that's saying the details are coming in the Republican budget that has those spending cuts and where they are. And he, like the president, didn't go into a laundry list here of the details of that budget. So in a little bit of a big buildup and then not so much, I think both the picky details of the president's budget that'll come out in a month or so and of the Republican alternative budget that Congressman Ryan promised here is where we will start to see specifically what are they going to cut, how much are they going to cut it, or put it the other way, from the president's point of view, where are we going to invest and presumably shift money from one area into another. You know, the last thing is on these rebuttals to State of the Union speeches, a Republican polling consultant yesterday was saying that it's a no-win situation no matter which party is the out party. You're all alone in a room with a camera. You don't have an admiring crowd. You don't have the chance to build off of them. And I think the best you can do is say, do no harm. And I'd say Congressman Ryan did a good job of doing no harm and clearly setting out the broad strokes of a Republican opposition. But when you're alone staring at that camera, it's really hard to be even close to the dynamic speaker that the president is, again, any president, in front of the Congress and having them respond.
There was also another Republican response, but it was more of a Tea Party response. Michelle Bachmann did a third or a second Republican.
second response. She and this was initially going to be streamed only on the internet, but CNN picked it up and covered it live as well, and Fox subsequently rebroadcast it. What Bachmann presented was more of a vigorous Tea Party attack on government spending and the Obama administration in particular, as well as a strong support to American exceptionalism and the miracle of America, as she put it. But it, too, didn't talk about some of the details of the budget so much as it talked about the broad principles of major cuts. So in terms of tenor, Michelle Bachmann was more aggressive in talking about the cuts that were needed and the changes and specifically blaming the Obama administration for many failings. At one point, she said, even during the Bush administration, spending was too high, but it exploded under Obama. That was as close as she came to a kind of bipartisanship, whereas Ryan was a little more, at times, bipartisan. There's been a lot of talk about Michelle Bachmann looking off camera. And this is the curse of having two cameras in a studio. No one knows which camera to look at. She looked at the webcam, but then appeared to be looking off camera from CNN's point of view. And a few people have commented on that, but I think it's an artifact of two cameras.
We have many callers, so let's go to Judy in Oshkosh next. Hi, Judy.
Hi. I'd just like to say that I really enjoyed the president's speech, and for sure I am not a Republican. I am clearly a Democrat. But I think that if Paul Ryan ran for president, I would consider voting for him in the sense that at least they put somebody on that was reasonable. They did not put somebody on with a lot of vitriol. He was reasonable. He stated his point that he was a Republican and that, these were the ideals. But, somebody needs to tell the Tea Party that they need to grow up and stop all the vitriol. I was very impressed that the Republican response was reasonable, adult-like. He made his points clear without getting ugly. And I really appreciate Paul Ryan for that reason. And I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you.
Thanks. How important is that to all of us, do you think, Professor Franklin?
Yeah, I'd make two points about it. One is that Ryan has risen to incredible influence in the Congress because he's one of those really rare people that's been willing to invest the time and effort to really learn the details of the budget. I don't think anyone on either side of the aisle would point to anyone who's better than Paul Ryan about knowing the policy details. And so that's both a terrific strength of his in the Congress, but it also made him a good spokesperson coming out last night as someone that no one would say is mistaken or unrealistic about the nature of the budget deficit. On the Tea Party issue, I think that's driven more by where we sit is what we see. And I think it's worth quoting Michelle Bachmann in her defense of the Tea Party last night. She specifically said that the Tea Party is a dynamic force for good in America. If you come from the Tea Party side of this last election, this is a social movement which has revolutionized American politics, certainly GOP politics, in just over 2 years from a standing stop to a major force. So if you come out of that movement's point of view, which Michelle Bachmann does, and obviously the caller does not, then it looks very different from that other side of the aisle. And I think you have to maybe celebrate a little bit the fact that ordinary citizens banding together can still make such a difference in America in just a short period of time, even if you disagree with the policy goals that they're after, which, again, Judy said herself, she's not on that side of the aisle. But I thought Bachmann, in that sense, was a good spokesperson for that particular quote of a dynamic force for good.
Briefly, Professor Franklin, did the Republicans choose Paul Ryan in part because he's the chairman of the Budget Committee, but he wrote this roadmap for Republicans, which hasn't gotten a tremendous amount of attention. And some commentators note that that roadmap calls for ending Social Security and Medicare as we know it for those under the age of 55.
You know, this is one of those tricky areas that a lot of Republicans in the last year celebrated the roadmap in general, but then backed away from some of the details. I don't think that had much to do with Paul Ryan's plan specifically, as it does that any member of Congress up for reelection is a little hesitant to be pinned down on some of the more painful details. But I think the proposals we're hearing from the GOP in the House that include rolling back discretionary spending to 2008 levels. As Ryan said last night, that amounts to a 25% cut in discretionary domestic spending. Earlier, Bill was saying there's lots of efficiency to be wrung from government programs. Well, this 25% might really put a test to that, is whether a 25% rollback can be done with efficiency gains only, or whether it means really painful cuts. So I think the point here is that Ryan's, whether it's his roadmap or his budget chair, how he shepherds through GOP proposals to roll back spending to 2008 levels, involves some very major cuts. One thing that both the president and Ryan slipped by last night were these discussions focused almost entirely on discretionary domestic spending, not on Social Security, not on the defense budget, not on the debt. Those three and a couple of other things, healthcare spending, make up about 75% of the total U.S. budget.
We'll go next to Gary in Racine. Hi, Gary.
Good morning. Say, first of all, anybody that listened to the speech last night, be careful listening to President Obama. This guy has made his fortunes on being a speaker. He's a talker. He allowed this country for 2 years to founder. When he came to office, he knew we needed jobs. He knew that the economy was in trouble. Yet, he allowed it to sit there and struggle and suffer while he pushed his social agenda, the healthcare bill, which is still said to be the Congressional Budget Office, still can't say it's going to be a money saver, depending on which side you come from. He pushed gays in the military. He pushed all this social crap while he allowed people to suffer. And so to come now and say, oh, I'm going to get jobs, I'm going to get jobs, everybody listen to me, I'm going to get jobs. He hasn't done it before. He's not going to do it now.
Professor Franklin.
Well, this is the partisan divide here. The Obama folks would certainly point to many things that the Republicans point to as failures, the failed stimulus bill, the job-killing or job-destroying health care reform. And I think those are the viewpoints that Gary's representing, and it's widespread on the GOP side of the aisle. Democrats see it quite the opposite, that the auto industry bailout saved jobs at GM and at Chrysler. The stimulus, from their point of view, prevented much higher unemployment and a recession. The point I would make is these are very contested viewpoints between the two parties. Even something like the cost of health care reform that Gary mentions. Congressional Budget Office says it will save money over the time. Republicans reject that analysis and say that's because Democrats rigged the proposal to hide the true cost and it'll really increase spending. It's very difficult to come to any resolution of these issues when the two sides look at the same set of proposals and can't even agree on those pretty fundamental elements. So, you know, I think Gary's perspective is very much within the mainstream of conservative GOP thinking on these issues, but highly partisan as well.
Charles Franklin is our guest, a professor of political science at UW-Madison. Coming up after 7 o'clock, two different perspectives on the State of the Union. John Nichols from The Nation and the Capital Times, and Brian Schimming, who is the former political director of the Wisconsin Republican Party, will be with us from 7 until 8. And we will have many other guests, different perspectives, after 8 o'clock as well as our post-State of the Union coverage continues this morning. We welcome your perspective, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Charles Franklin, professor of political science at UW-Madison, about President Obama's State of the Union address last night and the Republican response. And we want your response, too. What stood out to you? What questions or concerns do you have? Jim in Elkhorn is with us next. Hi, Jim. Jim, are you there?
Yes.
Go ahead, please.
Well, it was an interesting speech. President Obama always delivers a good speech. As far as Congressman Ryan, he started out a little stiff, but, you know, it was a good comment by your guest there that an empty room makes it a little hard to do. He did get it rolling. He certainly is a policy wonk and can, you know, can talk that budget talk. It's always in the detail. The problem with the president's speech is, you know, there seem to be a lot of platitudes about things we should do, and I sat there thinking, well, how are we going to pay for all this? That's always the, you know, the question on that. You know, and I got to comment a little bit on your previous caller's comments about Tea Party. I'm not a Tea Party, haven't been involved in that, but growing up, and I'm thinking, you know, isn't it good that we do have a few people, you know, raising issues like that? Because as your political science professor would note, not only about 25% of the people, 30% of the people back in the time of the Revolution really were in favor of things. So, you know, growing up and shutting up wouldn't have gotten us where we are. We would have just been Tories and continued under King George. So, you know, you have to have those kind of zealots on either side to move things around a little bit.
Sounded all right. Well, your response, Professor Franklin?
Well, I'll give Jim a big amen on that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very hard when you're tied up in partisan politics to give the other side any kind of credit. But it does seem to me that the rise of the Tea Party movement shows that American democracy is alive and well, that a citizens' movement, perhaps with backing from large money interests, which has been a Democratic critique, but nonetheless has come out and made a big impact on American politics. And, you know, I'd say to the folks on the Democratic side of the aisle, if you don't like it, let's see you go out and mobilize and change your party in that direction. But ultimately, I'd go along with Jim on this very strongly that it's always nice to see democracy work, even if, you know, they happen to be on your side, or even if they happen to, especially maybe if they happen not to be on your side.
Now, while President Obama didn't come out and say the era of big government is over last night, did he indeed move to the center as many you know, claimed he would based on the election last fall?
I would actually say that from the point of view of what he said in the speech, there was less overt movement to the center than you might have expected. You know, he just appointed a new jobs commission headed by the CEO of General Electric. And a lot was made of that, plus his new House staff director, as being bringing big business or corporate interests more into the center of the White House, more concerned with how regulation stifles business and its growth and competition, I actually would have expected ahead of time that some of those themes would be more developed, more the handout to the other side, to the opposition. And we didn't hear a lot about that. The closest he came was talking about corporate tax rates in America being higher than anywhere else in the world, and that both parties could agree on finding some reform that would simplify the corporate tax code. But in that sense, I don't think we saw as much overt centrism, if you will. Where we saw some element of it was in the things that really are not that controversial in the big picture: out-innovate, out-educate, out-build. Those as themes really don't divide us. The question is, how do you do those things? How do you pay for them? Nobody wants bad education. No one wants our students to drop out in the eighth grade. But the problem is, what do you do to accomplish those goals? So in that sense, I think much of the speech was about broad themes that are a little bit more congenial to everyone.
And again, there'll be more in the budget when it is unveiled, but and usually in State of the Unions, it's not a spreadsheet of numbers.
Certainly not a spreadsheet of numbers, though. How you pay for things, how big new programs are, those are often mentioned. And again, it was notable last night that those kinds of details were largely lacking.
Yeah, he did call for the spending freeze, said the military would also be making cuts that would not hurt our national security. He said, I'm going to give up stuff that I like federal funding for community action programs. And he said, we need to increase taxes on the wealthy. Isn't that how we pay for all this?
Well, that alone is not going to do it. That alone is not going to come close to balancing the budget. Mm-hmm. And he only mentioned in passing the Debt Reduction Commission and mm-hmm. its proposals for dealing with Social Security and medical spending over the long haul. Those are big issues that are, you know, the reason we ignore them is precisely because they're so big and they're so difficult. One other thing he made a mention of in passing was that now that Don't Ask, Don't Tell had been repealed, he called on universities mm-hmm. to end any limits on ROTC or military recruiting on campus. And that was a very modest but direct hand to conservatives who have said those bans are completely unjustified. Certainly now the rationale for them has also been removed.
And Jeff in Mequon. Hi, Jeff.
I was just listening to the speech and really wondering just what audience it was he was addressing. I mean, I'm a lifelong Democrat, and if I was going to script this as a movie, it'd be President Strangelove, you know, how I quit worrying and learned love the jobless deficit or jobless recovery. I mean, there really wasn't anything. If I'm an unemployed person who's been suffering through that, upside down on my mortgage, suffering through that, there was really none of that was addressed at all.
Jeff, thank you. I'm sorry. We have less than 30 seconds, Professor Franklin.
Yeah, I'm glad Jeff brought it up here at the end, though, because the president has been talking for over a year now that we're beginning to recover, but the recovery is not fast enough. That theme wore out. And last night, the only way he addressed it was to say corporate taxes are up, the back of the recession has been broken, and the stock market is way up. He really didn't talk about jobs or the slow recovery. He tried to deal with that issue by ignoring it, and Jeff, I think, has really nailed him on this omission.
Thank you very much for being with us. Charles Franklin, professor of political science at UW-Madison. More on the State of the Union coming up after we check the latest news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.